Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast. Before we get into today's episode, many of you might know that some of our most downloaded episodes revolve around the topic of anger and rage, and what to do with all of those different emotions when they come up in your marriage and in your parenting. And so we were having a conversation about this, and we decided to invite Sally Lemos, who's been on the podcast before, our dear friend, to talk with us about this really important topic. How do we handle anger? What is it telling us? What does the Bible say? And more. One of the things we do also need you to know about is at the very end of this conversation, Sally actually walks everyone through a grounding practice. It's maybe 4 or 5 minutes long, and it's something you can use anywhere. It could be when you're driving. It could be simply when you're sitting at home, laying in bed at night. Lots of various ways to use this. But even if you don't listen to the whole episode or have time to listen to the whole episode, make sure to take advantage of that grounding practice. Very helpful, very informative, and hopefully it will be something that's a tool for you in your journey of parenting. Enjoy today's conversation. What do you avoid?
Starting the podcast. I'm recording.
I'm recording you saying how much you hate to start the recording the podcast.
Everybody knows.
So welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast, everybody. Elizabeth, as you've learned, hates introing the podcast, but she's here with me today, which is great.
I don't know why it's so awkward.
It is awkward. And we're going to talk about anger and rage today, which I'm excited about. And we have just a very special guest, Sally Lemos, back on the podcast. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I'm so glad that you will. Actually, this whole episode today is your fault in the best way.
Oh, dear.
In the best way.
Everybody loves to talk about anger. Yes.
And rage.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Those two things.
Yeah.
But we were talking, and you just did a beautiful blog post recently. Mm. And because we're literal almost neighbors, we just decided, why don't we just have a conversation about this? So thank you for opening up your space.
You're welcome.
Love having this conversation.
Yeah.
And today we're looking forward to it. Also, to just everybody, just a couple of housekeeping things. To everybody, thank you for rating and subscribing and leaving comments. If you haven't had a chance to do that, just take 30 seconds. That helps us so much. We're a part of this bigger thing called the algorithm, and we would love to say that doesn't help, but it actually helps us a lot. So on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify or wherever you listen, if you would rate and subscribe and even leave a comment, that's super helpful for us. So let's talk about anger. Who's ready?
Yay.
Maybe actually, Sally, why don't you start us today? So where did this come from? You just recently wrote a blog post, which we'll link in the show notes, but tell us where this came from. And I know it sparked our excitement. And before you answer that question, one more caveat to say, we are talking about anger again, because we are our top episodes that are downloaded and listened to are repeatedly, like the top three are all ones that we've done about anger. Mm-hmm. And so we just started to realize maybe we should speak a little bit more to that as it seems to be something that's hitting a specific need. So where did this come from?
So I think what really and this is the way it is so often for me, is just I start to hear this kind of theme in mm-hmm. my office. And anger and rage is just part of being human. And mm-hmm. it happens. And we just need to be honest with that it happens. And I think if we can be honest in a way that we can be curious about what's going on when we're feeling angry, that can kind of change things for us.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you wrote about this. You shared a fun story, which I think at any point you should definitely share. But, you know, as we go through this topic of anger and specifically rage, I do want to just be really clear that I think what you just said, just honing on one part of what you just said, which was it's a part of the human experience. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I'd love to maybe just talk about that and maybe normalize anger a little more. Because I think in church culture, especially evangelical culture, we were just chatting about this barely before, but the idea that a lot of emotions are just kind of pushed mm-hmm. down in general. Is that what
Absolutely. You said? Yeah. I think it's important for us to know the truth, to intellectually know it and believe it and follow it. But it also is super important for us to be able to be connected to what we're experiencing mm-hmm. at the same time. If we try to cut off all the emotions and other than joy or peace or, you know, those things, we're denying what we're experiencing. And that's a great way for anger to get really big. Mm-hmm. Anger's there for a reason. So if somebody steps over a line that is my line, either unknowingly or knowingly, I should have a reaction to that that says, that doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. If I in the moment can say that doesn't feel good and respond in a way, then the anger goes away. But if I kind of ignore it, and I think sometimes we do that in church, sure. it's like somebody says something or somebody asking, you know, like, do you want to make a meal for somebody or whatever? Mm-hmm. And for me, for my capacity, cooking something for someone, the right answer for me is, thank you so much for thinking of me, but I'm not going to be able to do that. it would send me right over the edge. And sure. that sounds like a simple thing. But if I keep overextending myself like that over and over and over again, and then I have a 5-year-old that has a meltdown, it's not going to be pretty.
No. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's not going to be pretty.
Yeah.
Let's insert the other night. No. No, I mean, just like literally Friday night. I can't even remember the circumstances because there's too many to count. But just, I don't know what it is about bedtime that feels like, I mean, I do. So let me be honest. I do know parts, but there is like a certain thing that kind of happens. And I find myself like gearing up towards bedtime. Like, all right, what fights am I going to have to fight? Right? Like Sally's holding up her fist. Yes, that's exactly right.
Who am I going to have to wrestle sleep tonight?
Who is going to get it? And not because I'm wanting
to
hand
it. Whose door do I sit out behind? Because there's somebody coming out all the time.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, we... so many times, girls, you are not allowed. It's just with our younger two. Our older two are fine, but younger two, like girls, okay, so you're not allowed to get out of bed. But then they're very smart. So then Sloan gets the very practical questions and she asks them all. What if there's an emergency? Okay, if there's an emergency, okay. Well, what if I'm really scared? Well, yeah, if you're really scared, because I also want to be available to my kids. I don't want her to be laying there soft crying, so terrified she can't move because dad said don't get out of bed. So I'm like, okay, if you're really scared. Well, what if I'm like kind of scared? Like, well, I think you need to be really scared if you could. I'm going to let a 5-year-old define what's kind of scared and really scared. And then you can get up. But I mean, I'm telling you, it is a moment for anger for a lot of parents, I think. And our kids are feeling a lot. And even before we keep going, I would love to know, Sally, because obviously with what you do and your work, what do you think it is about bedtime from your perspective and experience that makes it so hard?
So I think the number one thing is parents are tired.
Yeah.
And I'm ready to be done. And even as you're talking, I remember being a single mom and having 3 littles, and 8 o'clock was like, I'm done. Mm-hmm. I am just like,
you're
I don't
like
care
Elizabeth,
if you're
8 o'clock, you're done. Yes.
I don't care if you're tired or not. So it would be hot and we didn't have air conditioning and it was still light and kids could hear other kids playing. My kids could. Sure. Oh, the windows are open.
I remember this when I was a kid too. Yep.
I would put their pillows in the freezer so they would be super cold.
So
they could lay down and go to sleep. And they just hated that I did that. And now I have 2 daughters who have children. And they're like, was brilliant.
That was such a great idea.
But it's, we're tired.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And we know that there's a likelihood that we're going into something. Mm-hmm. The thing that I think, just thinking about this piece, mm-hmm. is even if I'm not saying anything, mm-hmm. but if my heart rate is picking up,
yes,
because I'm doing this, like I'm making fist again, if I'm kind of like, oh gosh, I got to muscle this person into bed, mm-hmm. they're feeling it in their bodies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's, oh, darn
it. Yeah.
It's partly my fault.
Well, but
in the
but
sense, if, energizing if, that.
And so here's the idea of slowing down to go faster.
Yeah.
If I can just be more in a state that I'm slowed down and it's going to take what it's going to take, and I can use a tone that I'm right here. Mm-hmm. I will keep you safe. You're mm-hmm. going to be okay in your bed. It's yes. cozy night time. Whatever the words are that you say. I just put Ellie down for a nap in my closet, which is where we put the portico. It's a big closet.
That sounds
terrible.
No, we
put all of our kids in closets.
They sleep so good.
I mean, let's be fair. An American sized closet is a European bedroom.
That's true.
No joke. Or New York, it's a whole apartment.
Yes, so, yes. She's not in a drawer or anything like that. But that convenient. That whole process of, laying her down, and she's not at my house that often, but if I can be really like, I've got you, I'm holding mm-hmm. her, my breath is really slow, I lay her down, I kind of rub her tummy, rub her face, that communicates to her that she really is safe because my body is telling her that she's safe.
Oh my goodness.
Mm. So just, and this sounds so silly, but with my dog, this place with this too. Like I'm getting ready to leave. I've got a full day of clients and he has to go out and go potty before we leave. If I'm like, go potty. He's just like freaking out everywhere. But if I can just like, good job, stay in the yard, go potty. Yay. And I'm slower. Guess what he does?
Mm-hmm. He just immediately
pees. He comes, he gets his thing. I'm off. So it's the whole idea of really noticing, I think, in my body mm-hmm. what I'm feeling. And if I can slow that down, not like mm-hmm. we're not doing something,
sure,
but I'm breathing.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I'm going to be right here with you. I'm reassuring so that there's a sense of mm-hmm. safety.
We're trying
things
this
are slower.
Because in one sense,
does that kind of make you feel sleepy?
It does. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I need to host a podcast. So stop it. I'm like so relaxed all of a sudden. I'm like, oh my gosh, girls, could you just take this? I'm ready to take it now. No, I just think what you're saying as an example, or just maybe to highlight what you're saying. It's so funny. I'm making all these connections. I'm sure you are too, honey, where you're realizing, oh, there's lots of times when I am so tired, done for the day. And so I'm geared up to be like, I just got to take care of this really quick so that they go to bed. And it always blows up in my face. Meaning like what you're saying.
I think
our youngest one, Sloan, super in tune to this more than even Birdie is. And so she's like, she feels that energy. I mean, mm-hmm. she could never describe it, but like that intensity, she feels it. Mm-hmm. And
she probably needs the most calming of a presence. But this just makes me think of like, don't you just think that this is what just being in the presence of Jesus would have been like? That, we have this, the language now of being a non-anxious presence, that Jesus was a non-anxious mm-hmm. presence. And yet we know that he felt so deeply. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just read even Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, like feeling so deeply mm-hmm. about what was about to happen, agony. So he felt the full range of emotions. And yet I can just imagine what just physically being with him would have been like, of just like, come to me. Like we're going to read that scripture, all you who are weary, and that is the presence we get to offer to our kids, not perfectly, but that to me is like what we're envisioning of like, what would Jesus be to them?
You are enjoying content brought to you by Intentional, a crowdfunded nonprofit that desires to help families and marriages all around the world in the area of discipleship and spiritual formation. This offering is completely free thanks to the generosity of our growing community of Legacy Builders. Legacy Builders is a group of people from all over the world that gives monthly to fuel this dream that we have in our hearts of seeing discipleship to Jesus in the family become a way of life. A monthly gift of $5, $10, or even $30 can continue to fuel this ministry forward. Our dream is to invite people like you to join and partner with us at a financial level and to see this work integrated into families. So as you listen to this podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us? Would you allow the Spirit to lead you, even if it's just a few dollars a month? Thank you so much. And may the Spirit of Jesus give you wisdom, clarity, and joy as you pray about joining us. If you want to join today, go to intentionalparents.org and click on give.
And almost like you're trying to channel that for them. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And I can't remember which gospel it is, but in one of the gospels where he's crying out, it's in the crying out, he's asking. And then the angels come and minister to him. So what would it be like? And I'm just thinking of a mom that was just like done, you know, tucking people in, but just had the presence of mind to just pray as somebody was having a meltdown. Just, I'm so tired. I'm so done. And she was able to go in and just be with her daughter. And her daughter was sad about a flower that had gotten lost or broken or something that she had made for a mom for Mother's Day. And she was just able to be with her sad. And then her daughter went to sleep rather than, I mean, she was just astonished that just praying changed her position as being able to be present with her child. And it was sad and it was hard, but it could have been a night of going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, because get in your bed. It's fine. You're fine. It's fine. You're fine. Which just kind of amps it up even more. And I just constantly want to, I didn't know any of this stuff when my kids were little. I did a lot of those things where it's just get in bed, get in bed, stay in bed. But now realizing that slowing it down, we actually get to the end conclusion that we're all hoping for faster by just slowing ourselves down, inviting Jesus in, just like Jesus invited, take this from me. He's agonizing. If That's we can, beautiful. If we can do that, it's so hard. Well, it's so hard.
Well, I was even saying, just thinking, because we're talking about it, but the verse that I know you connected to this whole blog post, can I share it?
Yes, and I like your version way better than mine. I want to hijack it and redo it.
It's not my, well, I mean, good thing is Eugene Peterson did it, not me.
Yeah, but I love
the Message translation of this particular verse is one of my favorites. So Matthew 11, 28 through 30. And this is in the Message, and I think it just says it. It, again, it's my favorite translation of this verse, but it says, are you tired, worn out? Ladies, let's all say amen.
Amen, parent on the planet.
Yeah. Burned out on religion. That's another part. That's a whole other podcast. Come to me, Jesus says, get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. That's a really interesting phrase. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Back to what Elizabeth, you were saying, just being with Jesus, watching him do it. And then one of my favorite lines, learn the unforced rhythms of grace. Unforced. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. And I mean, there it is. Learn how to do it Jesus's way, slowing down. One of the questions, Sally, that you had posed in just this quick little post, you said, could it be that anger is trying to tell us something? Tell us more about that.
So I think that comes from like an internal family systems lens of just recognizing that really to have compassion for ourselves, which is where growth happens. All of our parts, even the angry parts, rage, all of our parts have good intentions for us. So if we can slow down and create some space that we can just, what's happening? How do I notice it in my body? Just did this today with my therapist. What's it feel like in my body? Is it shifting? Is there, do I have any idea what this is about? Where is it coming from? It's an overwhelm. Just noticing in the moment what that experience is, we begin to see, so when this happened with so-and-so, that thing got said, might not have anything to do with our kids in that moment. When this thing happened with my child, their anger, their facial expression, their kind of almost a micro movement kind of transported me to a place of my own childhood. Mm. And so those are things like we have memories that we know in our minds. They're mm-hmm. explicit. I remember, you know, sitting here with you guys doing this once before. Mm-hmm. There are memories like I used an example at the retreat of kind of taking a moment for myself, feeling anxious and not wanting to go and kind of fearful one morning and just asking myself, like, what is this? And for me, an easy way to kind of make sense and begin this is like, how old do I feel in this moment? Mm. Which is kind of a...
Oh, that's an interesting question. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like, I feel like I'm about 7.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's a really interesting question
and
to
then
ask.
It kind of helped me, what was going on when I was 7? And it's dark and I'm feeling it's dark now. So that just kind of opens this window of what's happening for me that I can begin to make sense of something and invite Jesus to be with whatever that is. Mm. Is there a part of me that needs him to be with that younger part of me mm-hmm. and help that part be seen and heard in a way that part's soothed mm-hmm. so that the reactivity isn't there?
Mm. Yeah.
The anger can be inviting us to a place with Jesus mm. that shifts who we are so that we can begin to see our kids in a mm. different way. Mm-hmm. But again, it takes slowing down. Mm-hmm. And I think the challenge is as parents, you've got, where do you do this? Mm-hmm. How do you fit this into your day?
How do you fit this?
Yeah.
Were you going to say something, Elizabeth?
I was just going to say what you just explained has probably been the most profoundly helpful thing for me personally in the last couple years, just learning it from you. My natural inclination when feeling any of the quote unquote negative emotions, anger being one of them, which is I go to anger often, but I would immediately feel shame. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't be mad. I shouldn't talk to my kid that way. I shouldn't talk to my husband that way. Like it was all immediately directed at I did something wrong. Zero curiosity, zero, what could this be trying to tell me? Like I had no handlebars for that. Mm-hmm. And you helped me so much with slowing down enough to ask that question, what is this trying to tell me? Mm-hmm. To be curious about it. And it has been incredible to reflect back on to how much shame I used to live into because of anger, mm. to now how much freedom I feel when I have moments of anger, how the process that you just described of slowing down, being curious, what is this trying to tell me? How old am I? That's mm-hmm. been a new one I've been adding in where I can almost quickly link it to like, oh, this has nothing to do with what my daughter just said. This has everything to do about how I felt when I was little and this thing would happen, mm-hmm. you know?
Exactly.
It took me a while to be able to link it to, that felt really weird to me, like my younger self. I was very not in touch with my younger self.
Yeah.
But it's been very helpful lately. But it has been so freeing for me as a mom. And so to be able to move through that process and to at the end feel like I'm connected to the Father more, like I can truly go and repent to my kids and not be harboring in my heart, well, but it's their fault that I'm just so annoyed.
If they would just stop doing that.
You know, but to truly repent and say, regardless of what you did, that is not how I want to respond. And that wasn't okay. And I'm sorry. But to be freed of the guilt and shame of it, because I am able to understand where it's coming from, why it's happening, and then have grace on myself, which is not my natural bent at all, to have grace on myself or really on other people. It's worth those of you listening who maybe that process sounds really foreign and like, how could that possibly help? And how in the world do I do that with a house full of little kids? I think it's you have to look for the micro moments, but it starts to become not just something that you carve out time and space to do, but that becomes this repetitive process that you're able to notice every time.
Like, it becomes a rhythm.
Yeah, you can almost notice it as it's happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes catch yourself before you're too far down the path. It's so profoundly helpful.
So I think we have anger. Well, I don't think we have anger, but then one thing you highlighted, and I think is important to make sure we talk about is rage.
Yeah.
Cause I think people might, well, I mean, it's easy to blur those lines, but maybe just give us a little clarity on rage from your perspective as a clinical therapist who's constantly seeing different stories and different, you know, different examples. What would you define rage as, and what's the difference between anger and rage?
So rage is kind of anger on steroids. So if we stuff, eventually there's going to be an explosion. And hopefully we're not, that doesn't happen all the time. But if we're not able to help in a healthy way, express anger, manage anger, befriend anger, and constantly stuff it, we're going to end up with some explosions. And rage is destructive. Rage is holes get punched in the wall. Rage is voices get really loud and harsh things get said that you would never in your right mind say when you're in your window of tolerance. And I think the downside of that is the same shame that we feel when we're angry and we kind of blow it. If we've been rageful and we've blown it and really hurt someone, the cover up for that and the pattern of that can lead to some really unhealthy, unhealthy things. Mm.
Do you see in your work with clients, those who've had parents who really struggled with rage, like grew up in an environment where rage was very common, do you find that they're more likely to suppress their anger because they're so afraid of rage, like of that coming out of them?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I think the way we, I mean, it's pretty individual. I think I see both.
Yeah.
I think I see both. I think I see where rage can be really protective and keeping people away.
Yeah.
And if someone's been hurt by somebody else's rage, getting bigger can be pretty protective. And so I think you can see like the cycle go on that way with that. Mm-hmm. I also feel like, and just maybe I'll just personalize this and put it in my own life. I have a dad who would rage, not all the time, but enough that, you know, I kind of had this hunched posture when he was around of sort of walking on eggshells. And trying to be small and invisible, which sort of set me up, and then placate, you know, whatever I could do to make, you know, I'll fix it, do whatever, take responsibility.
Yeah.
But then that set me up. That's a pattern that I learned really young to not know how to set boundaries and relationships and end up in places that were kind of harmful, you know, doing the same type of thing. So I think it's important to be able to understand anger and have a healthy relationship with anger and model a healthy relationship with anger with our kids so that they know that like that didn't feel good.
Yeah.
And it's okay for me to say that didn't feel good.
Yeah.
I don't like it when that happens.
Yeah.
You know, we don't blame. It's your fault. You did it. You made me mad. That's not healthy. But to say, I feel really hurt when you did that, or I feel really angry when you said that to me. So we're owning our own experience. So the other person can see what that is. But, you know, we each have to take responsibility for our own emotions. We can try. But if we ignore them, they're going to come out. They're going to come out sideways. And it's just not pretty.
No.
See, so often, isn't it funny how, well, I can just say from my own experience, how it feels like, obviously, my response is my responsibility. My anger is my responsibility. But I often think of it as something I'm choosing to do rather than seeing the whole story, that it's something, it's not just happening to me. It's an emotion that is turned on because there's other things that I'm turning off. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
So it's this weird combination of like post-anger is like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Or I shouldn't have been angry. I shouldn't have spoke that way. But I usually don't include the very real part that this also is an emotion. There's also these other things. This isn't just because I'm an angry person, right? Because I think that's the other piece that gets really tricky is you start to be to, or your spouse is really angry at you and they're identifying you. Like, why are you such an angry person, right? And what I hear you saying, maybe just to summarize for those who are, you know, a part of just even hearing this conversation, is there's so much that anger is trying to tell you.
Yes.
And I feel like that's something that's not talked about enough.
Yeah.
Or that's understood, or that I know even is maybe I'm slower to this. And Elizabeth, you might be over here going like, duh, we've done, like, I know all this. I think for a lot of people, they don't know that.
Yeah.
They don't know that mm-hmm. their anger is actually trying to communicate something to them.
And if you think about, and it's kind of the clinic word, implicit memories, meaning they're memories that are recorded in my body that I don't have conscious awareness of. Mm-hmm. If something happens in the here and now that pokes that, if that started when I was young, I've developed some sort of a procedural memory that when this gets poked, I'm going to do da 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 yes. to protect myself.
So mm-hmm. tell me what those things are called again. What kind of memories?
Procedural memories.
Okay. It's so interesting that you're saying that because I think everybody listening probably has a person that they know. And we used to just be like, man, that just person's kind of weird or off, or, you know, they would just have these weird responses. I'm even thinking of people in our life or my life where I've known them for years and years and years, and I'm still surprised. I'm actually, in one sense, I'm not surprised because I know, like, oh, if I ask this question or it gets into this area, I'm going to get this response. And I still feel like that happens very often where so many of us are having those things poked mm-hmm. and we don't, and we're quick to excuse it or call, just shrug it off like, well, they're just a difficult person. Mm-hmm. And really what's going on is there's like this story there.
There's a story. Mm-hmm. And I love that. That's a perfect word. It's a story that's yeah. trying to be told. And that's yeah. exactly like working with kids. We talk about storytellers.
Yes.
We have a storyteller of our mind. It works in pictures and in words. We have the storyteller of our heart, and it's all about emotions. And then our body, that's all about sensations.
Could you go a little bit deeper into storytellers? Because okay. I know that's so helpful for us with our kids because yeah. kids understand storytellers. And I know I just love the language that's emerged in our home from it. And that's it's all your fault again in the best way.
Well, there's lots of people that I could give credit because I didn't come up with this.
Sure,
yeah.
sure. But yeah, so tell me but maybe just go a little deeper on storytellers for someone listening, say if they've never okay. heard what it is, just to give some people that are listening a tangible resource to communicate with their kids in a specific way. Mm-hmm.
So the first storyteller that we probably know the most is the cognitive part of our brain. Like, it's pictures, it's words, it's the here and now. That's okay. a storyteller. We have the storyteller of our emotions. So we hear something, we see something, it brings sadness, it brings anger, it brings joy, it brings some sort of an emotion. So we can identify the emotion. Mm-hmm. And then it's our body with sensations. So it's I heard a sound and now I have fear. Mm-hmm. I feel the sensation of fear in my body. Mm-hmm. And our storytellers, our stories, and God's writing our stories. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He wants to collect them and make it this narrative that makes sense. An example of this is like, you know, describing what it was like for me when my dad sometimes would come home mm-hmm. and sometimes it was really scary. Mm-hmm. Now, as an adult, my stories, the storytellers have all kind of been able to tell their stories together. And I'm in a place that I can see that my dad was anxious. Mm. My dad had lots of pressure. My dad came home just overwhelmed to a family that he was responsible for taking care of.
Yeah.
And then there's three little kids and my mom and all the things going on, and it didn't take much. Mm. He didn't have any place to deal with any of the stuff going on in his life and in his world, and it didn't take much. Mm-hmm. It didn't make it okay.
No.
And I'm not minimizing the effect that it had on me. Mm-hmm. But now I can make sense of this in a mm-hmm. way that I don't take responsibility that I was a bad kid or that my dad was scary.
Yeah.
My dad had stuff going on.
Yeah.
I think it's so interesting
when you start to do the work yourself, how you start to be able to identify some of that stuff in other people.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the hard part is having the discernment to not tell the people sometimes, especially when you're close to them, like, hey, I just think that you're an anxious mess.
This is coming up
for you. Yeah. I think you need to work on that.
But the thing that when we take time and make space for ourselves and begin to understand the different parts of us and the stories that they hold, when I'm encountering somebody who maybe has a part that's activated, let's say rage, I can begin to look at that person and say, there's a part of you mm-hmm. that's really angry. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if that part of you maybe needs me to feel pain because you're in pain. Mm-hmm. That's way different than me being afraid and pulling away. And it's the same thing with our kids. Mm-hmm. If I can begin to rather than, oh my gosh, they're just out of control or whatever, and just think, what's happening right now for this little person in front of me that's falling apart?
The times that I know I've been able to do that, even from your coaching, is incredibly helpful. And it just neutralizes.
Don't you see them in a different way? It's like, this poor little sweet thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, just thinking about, this came up in conversation this morning, you know, a child hearing a noise and being afraid and like, I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. And as an adult, you're like, you're fine. There's nothing going on. Mm-hmm. But instead of saying that, saying, oh, you heard something and it feels scary. Mm-hmm. Let's go check it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Such a different situation. Oh my goodness.
Your body was telling you something. You get to pay attention to that. Mm-hmm. Good for you. Yeah. Let's check it out.
Yeah.
I think we're okay.
Fear's gone.
We have a new offering for you. If you would like to receive daily or weekly text messages and encouragement around parenting, marriage, with prayers and scriptures, click the link in the show notes and we would love to send those to you. Can't wait to connect more with you.
You gave us the term as well, mixed up storytellers, which I think that has been the most helpful with our 11-year-old. Of just when you start to see, I know her better than she knows herself at this point, and I'm helping her learn herself and unfold her. So I will see when something gets poked, when I know what I think it's probably bringing up for her, and I know what she thinks she's feeling or telling herself or believing is maybe not necessarily true. Mm. But when I can ask her the question, because she's done work with you, she understands storytellers, and I can ask her, do you think there's any mixed up storytellers in there? Mm. Maybe some storytellers that aren't telling you the truth. And she can almost immediately identify, yep. And she'll tell me exactly what it is. Or sometimes she'll say, I don't know. I need to think about that to see if some of these things are just not true. Mm-hmm. And we can have great conversations. But how many of us as full-grown adults, somebody looks at us a certain way or doesn't text us back, or maybe you were rejected by your parents or rejected when you were young, and you read everything into that look, that punctuation in the text message, a mixed up storyteller is coming up. That's not what's actually happening, but the procedural memory, your body's going right back to when it did happen.
Yes. And whatever, because we don't, as our brains are developing, we don't have the ability to reason. It's all black and white. Somebody's good and somebody's bad. There's a good guy and there's a bad guy. Mm-hmm. When something's going on, because we need the adults in our life, we're going to be the bad guy. Mm-hmm. So what gets stuck with those wounds are these negative beliefs about ourselves. Mm-hmm. I'm a bad kid. Mm-hmm. It's my fault. There's something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. If I could just do this, that negative belief gets stuck there. Mm-hmm. And so beginning to see things with the adaptive information of an 11-year-old from when she was 5 or 6 mm-hmm. or whatever, that 11-year-old has information that the 5-year-old doesn't.
Yeah.
She can help calm that part of her down by telling that part, oh no, you're okay. Mm-hmm. I got you. Mm-hmm.
That's So in your home, this was called the mama meltdown zone.
Yes.
So maybe could you tell that story? I know you shared it, but I would love to hear the expanded, revised version of that story. For the podcast, if you have, but give us an idea of what that looked like, or just that story you shared.
So that started, I was a single mom, had 3 littles, and like the end of the day is just so hard. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets home from school. We're kind of trying to unpack backpacks. Everybody's got all kinds of things. They don't want to do it. They're hungry. I'm tired. It just was kind of disastrous. And then everybody has to eat and I'm supposed to fix a meal, which is never a fun thing for me. So it just became so chaotic that it just trying to get this rhythm of we come home, we hang up our backpacks, we kind of figure out, have a snack, kind of do the debrief. We're all, and we just made space to kind of all be together for this. Mm-hmm. And they're little at this point. like kindergarten, first grade, third grade, something little. Yeah. We're still unpacking things. We'd get the homework done. We'd have the snack. They get to go play. And then I would fix dinner. And we had a line, literally a line in the kitchen that at that point, then it was like, this is the mama meltdown zone and you can't come in the kitchen. Because I was just done.
Did you say, if you cross this line, I will melt down? Or was it like they just
They just knew.
They just knew.
Yeah. They just knew.
I think I'm going to implement this. He's about to go on a long trip and I'm literally seeing on the floor right here. Like, I think this is how we're
this is
the
line.
The trip.
And I did have one. And my kids were just like, okay, great. We're not coming. I mean,
just don't use duct tape, sweetheart. It will stick. Yeah, please. Sorry. I mean, I know we're on a podcast, but these are things that I have to say.
We'll think this is hilarious. And I think it could work.
I think you're
okay,
right.
Okay, keep going.
I had one, though, that would put her toe on the line. I mean, two of them were just like, great. Now we know how it works. We're not going anywhere near. We get to go play. Dinner will be ready in a little while. Then we'll go on with the evening. But I had one that was just kind of curious, like, is this true?
Is this real?
Is this real? And she would, and I'm like, you get to kind of go spend some time over here now because it is real.
It's real.
It is real.
Oh my gosh. All of a sudden. Yeah. If you do this, please, would you take a photo and send it to us through social media? That'd
be great. The point of though, like,
it's not that specific thing, but that's me knowing what was going on for me and my body and what my capacity was, what my limit was and being honest with the people around me that this is my limit and I want to show up well for the people I love.
Yeah.
And in order for me to show well for the people I love, this is a line that I absolutely have to be real with, whether I like it or not. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, it's honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I think there's a piece to what you're saying, or maybe a part I see come up in a lot of people, in myself in different ways, in Brooke, in so many of my friends, where you might have a moment where you recognize you need to step away or desire to do something for yourself for a minute, or you see yourself like coming up on that edge of you're not going to be able to hold it in. And then I think so often, I think this is so the enemy. The next thought that precedes it is, well, I need to be there for my kids. I want, for Brooke, it's the maybe mixed up storytelling. I want to be a present dad. And this fear of if I don't show up in every single moment, I'm not.
What
a
was it the
dad.
Other day that I was struggling to do? And if it's embarrassing, please don't expose.
I'm trying to. I was thinking about what you were. You wanted to do something.
Oh, I was going on Saturday. Yeah. So we have an infrared sauna. Oh, praise God! Thank you, Jesus, for that gift. And it's for Elizabeth's health, and it's been a strategic thing that we've decided to take, you know, time and energy invest into, but it's a great thing. So. What was the situation? You were doing something.
I was
something.
Going to take the big kids out to get a birthday present for a friend.
And I didn't want to go out because I'm usually out during the week. And so Sabbath, Saturday, I just love not going.
And the two
anywhere.
Littles were home and you wanted the sauna. And he had this moment where he looks at me.
But the sauna is out in the garage, so it's in the house. So I'm not like away anywhere.
No. And the kids come out all the time and either come they in hang, the sauna or play in the garage. And you just kind of had this moment where you looked at me and you just said, I want a sauna, but I also want to be like present to them. And I know the narrative that he will often believe. And he's like the most present father I think I've ever been around.
I don't think that's
you
true,
are,
but I appreciate
you are,
that.
You are like hyper aware of being present
it's
to
probably
them.
Probably from woundedness.
It
not,
is.
Not
it
from
is.
Proactiveness.
It is. So I got to speak truth to him and just look at him and remind him of all the stuff that we've learned from you, that we've read books about. Hey, remember, it's a repeated pattern of relating and behavior that does the damage over time. You're not repeatedly isolating yourself from the kids, telling them to go away, not
there,
being present to them.
But sometimes I feel it.
You're present to them all the time. You taking a half hour to sauna is not causing any damage for them.
It was more, I think there was more going on there internally for me. But it's, I have a hard time. Like, I don't, when the kids wake up, I like to be here. I don't want, and now this is my own deal and I do not speak for intentional or for any other, or put this as an expectation on any dad, because I know every situation is different. Every job requirement is different, but I don't have to be out of the house at 6:30 or 7 in the morning when most of my kids get up. I'm grateful for that. At the same time, like I don't like being busy when they're awake. I like being present. Now, I think a lot of that comes from because when I grew up every morning, my parents had to work early and my mom and dad were on by the time I was up because that was just their life. There's nothing wrong. That's just their life. And I think because of that, even to this day, my mom jokes with me. We joke like I hate fast paced mornings. Like nothing makes me more angry and irritable. Talk about anger and rage. Like having to like get up and be somewhere. So I'll wake up hours before I have to be anywhere. If I have to be somewhere at 6 a.m, I'll wake up at 4 just so I don't have to be rushed. Like that's a real thing. And I realized like I like being present to my kids. And so I think that morning I was already gone for something and it was a buildup. And so I know that it's not all coming from like a super healthy place. So I know
but I'm highlighting that because I think that is so many parents actually embodied experience. Mm-hmm. I have this need. I feel myself getting angry. I know I need to, like, I would like to step away and catch my breath, but I feel guilty.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I think a lot of it is misconception over what secure attachment actually, what it takes to actually create secure attachment. A lot of it is wounding from parents who mm-hmm. weren't around or were distracted. But can you speak to that at all? Because I feel like that's so many parents' actually embodied experience. Mm-hmm.
So I think if we go back to the passage that you read.
Yep.
Like that pace, that rhythm of grace.
Yeah, unforced rhythms of grace.
Unforced rhythm of grace. That's what we want our kids to live.
Yeah.
So if we can model, you know what? I need to take a break. I'm feeling tired. Mm. I'm going to go sauna. I love you. Mm-hmm. I'll be right here. And then we'll play a game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's an unforced rhythm of grace. Mm-hmm. We can't be on all the time for our kids.
No.
I mean, it's just not even.
No, it's not possible.
Real.
No.
Yeah. And you know the clinical term for parents.
Yes.
Say it.
My
good
favorite.
Enough.
Good enough parenting.
Yeah. And, you know, for our kids to know that we're reliable and we're going to be here. And I think. You know, the times that we blow it, that we don't step away, mm-hmm. that we recognize that we've a part of us has gotten activated, to be able to say, I need to take a minute mm-hmm. and if you've got real littles or, you know, kind of figuring out a rhythm, and I'm not big on screens or devices or whatever, but I've learned this from my youngest daughter gets iPads from the library that have learning apps on them. Mm-hmm. So even like, I need a minute, everybody gets 10 minutes with the iPad.
Yeah.
You know, that they can do a game. Yeah, so just whatever it takes to keep everybody safe and get away to take a minute mm-hmm. to kind of, what is this? And kind of hold some space for it. That then it's like, oh yeah. My parents weren't present for me or whatever it is. This is what's coming up for me to be able to really be with Jesus with that. And thank you for, you know, and asking for forgiveness and being restored and what that feels like. And then going back and being able to say that wasn't okay, but I want you to know that I'm spending time with Jesus with this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
And what you just described is so different than what are so often we do, and I say we because I do it all the time. I'm overwhelmed. I need to pacify my kids for a minute, and then it's not going and asking God, what is this about? What's coming up for me? It's like scrolling Instagram or watching a show or just like something to distract ourselves from feeling
at all. Or doing the laundry or whatever. It's like,
yes.
And really, I mean, if anything, I'm giving everybody permission and encouraging every parent to take breaks.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
To notice when you're tired mm-hmm. and to take a break.
Yeah.
Because you will be a better parent and you will be happier and things will go better.
Yeah, it's
and
so,
things will go better for our kids.
Yes. It is so funny that as you're even saying that, you know, one of the things that I'm just connecting these dots currently, but it's so interesting to hear what your kids think of you. Mm-hmm. So our kids aren't like telling us all the time what they think of us because we have normal kids and, you know, we're also not like, hey, so what do you guys think of us? Like, you know, we're never saying that, but there was this really cool window unintentionally that happened at church yesterday. We were at church and it was Sunday. And during this song, Elizabeth was singing. You did great, by the way. But she was singing and then the guy who was leading was just saying, hey, would you, during this next song, just turn to the person next to you just ask how you can pray for them. Like, what do you want Jesus? The question was, what do you want Jesus to do for you? And I was sitting next to Duke, and I was just Duke and I sitting there. And so I turned to Duke and I was like, Duke, what, like, how can I pray for you? What would you like Jesus to do for you? And he's like, I'm just really tired. I was like, probably because you're 14 and growing, you know, like, is there anything below that surface, or, you know, not surface, like moralizing his request. It was like, he was tired and he was needing rest. He's like, no, I'm doing okay. So I said, okay, so let's pray for that. And then he quickly, like, you know, cause I wasn't going to force the, now you need to ask dad.
Yeah.
What does dad need? You know, I wasn't going to do that. I just was going to let it just be what it was. He's like, okay, so dad, what is it you need? And I was like, okay. And you know, those moments where you're like, I need to be thoughtful, but also clear. So I was just like, well, I feel like I need wisdom and discernment being to be a good husband, a good father, and a good leader. Like the things that I have going on in my life, like those are the three most important spheres that I lead from. Mm-hmm. And wife, kids, and leadership, like in that order, are something I need wisdom and discernment for on the daily, like in excess. And so he's like, okay, so let's pray. So he starts praying, but he did. I was telling Elizabeth, it was crazy because it wasn't just like a prayer of request. It was like also affirming me during the whole thing, which I was, you know, when those moments happen when you're a kid and you're, or as a parent, you're like, what, this is like, you're trying not to cry. You're like, thanks, son. This, you know, this is fine. But he just starts affirming and he's saying these things like, oh, he, like, thank you for dad. He's such a rad. He's such a cool dad. I'm so thankful for my dad. And I was like, what? You know, I was like just welling up, you know, and then saying, he was just saying, he's like, I, you know, he's doing such a great job. God, would you just help him? You know, cause he's a better dad than most that I see by like a long shot. Like, what other dads do you see? And who are you even comparing to? Because I don't think that's true, but I appreciate, but just to hear him without
how he actually experienced you.
To, yeah, like that, that was like something that fell into my lap. I think it was a gift, a grace. And this isn't me saying that I am a great dad. It's me saying I was shocked at how he was receiving and picking up and then giving that back to me was like a gift I couldn't even think of. And so just to even have moments of prayer like that, like I was thinking, I want to recreate this not for my own ego, but for our kids, because it gives me a window into what they really think and what they really feel. Mm-hmm. And to have moments of prayer for each other, it was just a neat window and practical thing that kind of came up that I did not expect, but I was really grateful for in different ways.
I feel like God does that though. You've poured into him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah, quite a lot.
Yeah. You've poured into him and he gave you a glimpse.
That's true.
He gave you a glimpse of what you've put into him. That this is the young man that's growing up in your midst.
Who's taller than me. Oh my gosh. I'm a small dad all of a sudden.
Very proud
but
of it.
Yeah. But I mean, I think, there are places, there are checkpoints, I think, that God gives us. Like, I mean, some things coming to mind with a family that I've been working with a teenager. And I mean, he's showing up in the world in amazing ways, struggling a little bit at home, but it's like, wow, how is it that he's showing up in the world in such amazing ways? That can only come from what you've poured into him.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of hard work. And so when he comes home, sometimes he's done, you know?
Oh, sure.
And having grace and we still have to have boundaries. I'm not saying we don't, you know, and there has to be, you know, things that responsibilities, but you know, I just, the passage in Philippians is coming to mind, and this is a place that I camp a lot. Whatever is good, whatever is true, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, the rest of that verse. Focus on these things. And how often do we spend all of our time focusing on the negative things?
Yeah.
But if we focused on the positive things that our kids are doing and we're praising them for that.
Yes.
And even starting the day with, I love it when you have kind hands, or whatever it is that we're wanting to see more of. We don't have to teach or train or reinforce, but we can just praise.
Yeah.
That lets them know what we want to see more of and what they're good at.
If you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here. There's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers. Well, I'm thinking in our conversation as we go, I know there's a story you want to share, Elizabeth. I'm not sure where you want to fit it in, but practically, I think there's a couple things, because so many people are experiencing what you're saying. What are some of the practical things we can do? I know we kind of brainstormed just really quickly. We just wanted to be able to give you a couple tools, those listening, to be able to try to use. So even just try one of these things. But I'm going to just say the four really quick, and then we'll go through them. Okay. So first one was notice. Second one is slow down. And we want to highlight that the first point of our last podcast that just came out was also notice. And we know that because why? We always need to what, ladies?
Notice. Might be the first point of every podcast.
So first thing you need to do, just slow down enough to notice. So notice, and actually the second one is slow down. Third, make repair. And then the fourth thing is we want to do, we just want Sally to walk you through a grounding practice, which is actually really helpful. And we found helpful. I know you did it at the retreat. Mm-hmm. And so just to be able to take a second to give that to the people listening, to just even be aware of something that they don't even maybe know that they're aware of and practically how to do this. So first, let's just go through these briefly. But first, notice, what does that mean? You know, if someone's hearing this for the first time, Sally, Elizabeth, tell us what that means.
I think we've already touched on it quite a bit of just when, because I feel like sometimes when something is poked, it's an immediate, angry, explosive response. But usually, at least for me, there's agitation and irritation or tiredness that starts before I actually feel anger, or anger is coming out sideways at my kids. So if we can like pause and begin to notice as that feeling of irritation of, oh, I'm feeling really tired. I'm not sure I have what it takes to make dinner or to do bedtime, or to like the maybe precursor feelings to actually feeling really angry. If we can notice and pay, I love the term compassionate attention to, not just I notice it, so then I stuff it or shame myself until I stuff it because I shouldn't feel that way. But actually just notice, huh, I'm feeling really irritated. What's this about? Like, is it actually about my kid who's maybe being irritating, or am I just really tired and I need a break?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm.
Yeah.
And I think we can even make it more, like slow it down even more, where it's like, right now I'm sitting here and I'm just noticing my breath. Mm-hmm. Where is it? Mm-hmm. Is it fast? Is it slow?
Yeah, I'm just thinking though, there's so many people like myself as an example who maybe don't naturally in tune themselves to their bodies, but then have never even been told, have you tried to listen to your body?
Like, yeah.
No, I just do the thing. You know what I mean?
So just noticing our breath can be a great way to just kind of notice our body. Just we're breathing. Mm-hmm. Just feel the breath. Where is it? Is it up here? Is it in my belly? I mean, just notice that we're taking a breath. Or if I'm brushing my teeth rather than thinking about 9 million things, which I'm always thinking about 9 million things. And it's kind of like, oh, did I brush my teeth? But really trying to slow things down and notice that I'm brushing my teeth. Mm-hmm. You know, just like
to be present,
being really present with the things that I'm doing so that I'm in the moment rather than multitasking. Multitasking is actually not, I mean, we do it and we have to do it to kind of, and when I was parenting, it was like, if you could multitask, I mean, it's almost like a cartoon of a mom spinning mm-hmm. plates and mm-hmm. changing a diaper or whatever. That was like the thing. But that's really bad for us. It's really bad for our nervous system. Oh, it's not great for our brains.
I don't even think it's productive, like a lot of people say it is. Well, I mean, there's a bunch of studies out now that prove that it's not more productive.
It's not. Yeah. So I think the slowing down can be, you know, noticing what's happening relationally and how what my emotions are, but it can be beginning to just really try to slow things down on a more like almost micro level, if that makes sense. Yeah. And it's hard, mm-hmm. but it's what we hear everybody talking about as far as mindfulness.
Yeah.
Mm. It's like, I'm like right now I see the paper I'm writing. I can see my hand moving as I'm writing on the paper. I'm, you know, dialing my phone or I'm pushing the buttons. I mean, it's just really slowing down and noticing the more we get into that practice, we're going to notice, oh gosh, I'm tired.
Yeah.
Or, oh my gosh, I've had a headache all day long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've done nothing about it.
Yeah.
When was the last time I had a drink of water? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just those things. If we're plowing through our day, you know, expecting everything to get done or just wanting to get to a place of being done, we're missing.
Yeah.
On the arena of notice, what, you know, you were sharing a little bit this morning. It's Monday when we're recording this. So wherever you're mm-hmm. hearing it, whether you're on a walk or around or driving in your car, for us, it's Monday as we record this, but I feel free to share as much as is relevant to the story, and you don't have to, because I think the story exposes your failure.
Which I'm more than happy to do.
I'm just kidding.
It does.
No, it just shows a very normal, real parenting moment that I think helps everyone go, oh, me too.
Where I think I did some of these things and I skipped others, which led to more problems. So feel free to stop me anytime, Sally, to highlight what I could have done differently.
I just love how transparent you guys are. It's such a gift. Oh my gosh.
But I just think like we need to hear real stories. Yeah. The only way that we can combat the shame that I'm the only angry parent or everybody else must not blow it as much as I do.
What did my therapist, Jim, say to us? He said, you just said this, so say it again. He said
we were talking to him about parenting, and I can't even remember the whole context, but he said, you and Brooke are never going to have to worry about being overly permissive parents.
I was like, that's
like, you are gonna have, I can't remember what he told us we needed to press into more, but it was not
but it was just to, I mean, just to highlight, we are not, we're far more like a lot of those listening who have a lot of room that we can grow in this. And so, but transparency is freedom for us. It's freedom for others. Yeah. And the fact that we all are struggling is the most real thing. And so, our hearts to be transparent, but it's because that is the most, I think about when I read or when I listen to something or when I hear a teaching, it's always those that are the most real that you go, oh, that's the most impactful to my life. Now that might not be for everybody, but for my bent, it very much is. So, but anyway, I didn't mean to cut off your story. I just thought that that point that you were just sharing before we hit record about, we're just to give you context of our dispositions.
You can be slightly uptight. but so I've been noticing, I'm not very good at noticing, especially physical temptations, but I'm getting better. And I noticed that even on like Sunday night, I start to ramp up for Monday. Mm. So Mondays have just kind of become this really busy day. Mm-hmm. We homeschool all four of our kids. It's just Monday, my alarm goes off at 5 a.m. and the day is just like packed and crazy. Mm-hmm. And but I have four individual humans with various needs in my house. And so I find myself like ramping up for the day. I'm trying to take deep breaths. I'm trying to do the things. I'd gone to the gym really early, been in the sauna doing like a grounding practice like you're going to walk us through. Found it so calming. Like I felt like I was going into the school day very calm for a little while anyway. And then it just, Mondays can be hard for kids who have ADHD, which is one of mine. And so I'm just trying to get her to just sit in her seat and keep her hands somewhere around where I'm asking her to do the schoolwork that she needs to do. So I'm juggling her, and I'm still learning how to juggle the kindergartner and the second grader who both need hands-on from me, and figuring out when to like switch students and give one a break and when to switch back. So I'm trying to do that. Mm. My oldest is asking me 1,000 questions, some that have to do with school, some that have nothing to do with school. I'm still trying to figure out when I can be available to him and when he needs to just save his questions. And I found myself beginning to notice. I noticed my nervous system getting just a little more up, a little more up. I'm just like, the irritation was growing. Why can't anybody just sit in their seats and get their work done? Which you asked me a great question when I was sharing with you before recording. Why did you feel like you had to hurry up and get it done? And I wanted to hurry up and get it done because there's so many other things going on today. And I just wanted to get the hard stuff out of the way so I could move on to do the other stuff. And nobody was quite falling in line with the pace at which I wanted to just get school done today. And so I just found myself, I'm like more and more irritated, but we were pretty close to being done. So I'm just trying to like get everybody to finish, but I'm not being very nice. I'm not being winsome. I'm not making learning fun. But I finally get the girls to the point that they're done, and the younger two. As soon as they get done, one of my other kids walks upstairs and just says something very unnecessary, makes an accusation of another. And I lost it. I just immediately start yelling at that kid, like, or shall I say, just firmly rebuking, not asking any question. You are not allowed to say that. That is not okay. To which that kid did not respond in, oh, you're so right, mom, but had a very different response. So then I just lay it in harder because I'm just so mad at this point. This is not okay. You're not, it's clearly not working. That kid goes into their room and then comes back out. We'd both calmed down a little at this point. I'm still pretty like, now I'm mad at myself that I've totally lost it. But that kid comes back and just was super honest with me and just said, I know that I shouldn't have said that, but I like really don't like it when you get like that because you're not normally like that. And so it's scary when you act like that. Mm. And that kid was 100% right. I had to apologize, say I totally lost my temper. That is not how I want to parent. The reality is it's just really important to me that we don't accuse each other of things. And I felt like you weren't listening, but that wasn't okay for me to handle it that way. We ended up having a great conversation. We were able to make the repairs, which is step number three, but I skipped number two, and that's where it got me into trouble. I skipped the slowing down to pay attention, to actually remove myself, to calm myself down before I got to the point of totally losing it. But I share that story because that is so much of our reality. Mm-hmm. We are not going to always do the right steps, notice before it's too late, remove ourselves, be able to calm down. But if we have some sort of framework of understanding, first of all, this will happen. This will happen to us. We will not get this right every time. We will feel anger, and that's not a bad thing. We will feel completely overwhelmed just sensory-wise by everything that's happening
with four
with our
children.
Kids and all the needs. And I'm like trying to be nice to everybody while I just want to like rip my hair out. That will happen.
Yeah.
But I think, and we're going to skip steps where we blow it, but that the whole idea of making the repairs when we can,
it's
when
huge.
It's a normal part of your family culture, that repairs are made, that we will blow it. Nobody's perfect, but every time we make the repairs. And that's, I was able to walk away from the whole thing, able to learn, okay, next time when I feel myself getting to that point, it'd be better to just not finish school that day or to take a long break or for me to like take a minute, go back to the drawing board and resituate our day because that's not going to be, nobody learned anything in that last half hour I tried to cram down their throats. Nobody learned anything. But we were able to come out of it with, I would say, strengthened relationships through it.
Sure.
And me having learned, okay, this is not actually what I want our home to feel like. And here's some things I could do differently next time, you know? And so I think that's just the realness of this. And that has taken me years to be able to even notice.
Yeah.
And to be able to walk through all of that and not just feel shame or continued anger that it's somebody else's fault.
Yeah.
You know? So I think there has to be so much, the word that comes to mind is just space. For this, for all of us to learn because
and compassion.
Yes, because our kids are learning this at the very same time that we are. We're modeling it how to do it right and how to do it wrong at the same time.
But how to live humbly and how to lean into grace and how to know that God's strength is perfected in our weakness.
Yeah.
And I think, Elizabeth, the most beautiful piece in all of this is your daughter came to you and said, you're not normally like this.
Yeah.
She came to you.
Yeah.
That shows all the effort of slowing down and noticing the years that you've been doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so true. It does.
She feels safe.
Yeah.
And that's the piece that security, secure attachment, safety is they feel safe coming to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We are modeling how to go back.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And I actually,
that's gold.
And I know not every parent feels this way, but I love it when my kids tell me how I've hurt them. This is going to sound weird.
It's not sounding weird. I'm just saying, I know your personality. I have a friend as well who's very much a type one on the Enneagram. He says the same thing. I actually really, it helps me when people criticize me. I'm like, you're crazy. That is
actually
not the majority.
I don't, it's not helpful when people criticize me.
No, you know what I mean though.
But
yes.
But when my kids tell me how I've hurt them unintentionally.
Yes.
I find it incredibly freeing because it gives me an opportunity to make a repair and say, I don't want to be like that.
Yeah.
Will you please tell me, like Duke told me the other day, that I make a face that makes him feel a bunch of shame.
And I had that face.
Yeah. I said, I know what you're talking about.
Stink eye.
He goes, it's your disappointed face. And he made it for me. And so I said, buddy, I don't want to make that face. I make it sometimes without even realizing it that I'm making it. Will you please tell me every time I make that face? Because I don't want you to feel that way. That's not my intention. But like to me, it's really freeing. First of all, that they feel safe enough to tell me. But it gives me a chance. I'd rather do something about it now than hear about it when they're 40 and having no chance to try to make the repair while it was happening.
Where's there's some place in scripture that talks about keeping a short account.
Yeah.
It's
okay. People get it. Google short account Bible.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I feel like keeping a short account with myself, like when I'm feeling tired, when I'm feeling like, you know, Mondays are Mondays, whatever. Yeah. Like maybe as a family have a culture that Mondays are, you know, what are we going to do to turn Monday upside down so it's not a grouchy day because everybody's coming off the weekend? I mean, I feel Mondays and I don't even work on Mondays. But I mean, Mondays are Mondays. Mm-hmm. I think it's
kind of built into the culture.
Yeah. But keeping a short account with myself, that then I can keep a short account with other people.
Yeah.
And other people can come to me and not blame me.
Yeah.
You're a terrible mom because you did this or you did that. But gosh, it scares me when you're like that because you're not normally like that.
Yeah.
Or this is what I feel. You have this face and it's, you get to say, oh, that's not what I feel towards you. Thank you for letting me know.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's not about being perfect. That's that rhythm in the passage that you talked
unforced
about.
Unforced rhythm of grace.
Unforced rhythm of grace that you're living grace, that his grace is pervading us and then pours out to them and then they get to give it back to us.
It's incredible. Beautiful.
It is amazing.
So the three practical things, notice what's happening. And we've said these all basically, but we'll just be succinct. Then we're going to end with this practice. But notice what's happening, slow down. And if anger or rage either have come, make repairs. It is so important that you make repairs. And I know for me, that has been one of the most frequent things I do, but one of the most powerful.
Yeah.
By far, one of the most powerful. And constantly realizing how generous our kids are towards us and our own mistakes as well. It's amazing how forgiving our kids. I was telling you, Sally, before we hit record, like it's alarming how forgiving they can be sometimes, right?
Yeah, because they want to be connected to us.
Yes.
They want to be connected to us.
Yeah.
And I feel like before we can go to them and make the repair, for us to go to Jesus and make the repairs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where
yeah,
I feel afraid and there's shame and all that stuff comes in, if I, just like Adam in the garden, if I don't stay in that fear and I run because now I know there's perfect love for me and I can lean into that, and where there's fear and I can learn trust, my faith goes up, the fear goes away. Running, I blew it. I know. Yeah. He just,
God's
I know.
Like, no, not surprised.
I got you.
Yeah.
I got you.
Love that.
Yeah. This is what this is. This is a moment for you and me. You are forgiven. You are restored. I paid the price. Then I'm clean. Mm-hmm. And I go back and say to my husband, I'm not grouchy at you. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of grouchy around you. Yeah. Will you forgive me for being snappy? Mm-hmm. You know?
Sure.
But it's hard to do the one without the other because I still am carrying the weight of the shame and the guilt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But sweet Ernie. I love that guy.
Oh my gosh.
He's so wonderful.
It's hard to be mad at Ernie. I mean, I'm just going to say it.
Oh my God. He did such a good job when he gave him to me.
He's a sweet guy. He's so sweet. I love it. He's a master of many things. For today, why don't you just take us as we close, just through this grounding practice. So this is just a practical thing. If maybe just explain briefly what the what a grounding practice is for some who might be like, what is this? explain.
Yeah.
And then just walk us through what it is.
Okay. So a grounding practice is kind of going from the outside to the inside. So I'm out here, I'm focused in the world, but that it just gives me an opportunity to kind of reconnect with my body.
Yeah.
So my storytellers can connect my mind, my heart, my body can all be kind of connected. Okay. So there's lots of different ways we can do this. I have one that I love and I use a lot that I guided people throughout the retreat. So we'll do this one. And it's four elements. So it's air, earth, light, and water, which are the things that we have in our environment. But taking those and then connecting them with who God is in those types of elements and grounding. So we'll just do it.
Let's do it.
Do you guys want to do it?
Yes.
Okay.
We'll do
so
it.
I'm going to guide you guys through it.
Okay.
And so we'll just get everyone through it. So I just want to just invite you, if it feels okay, to just take a minute and go inside. For some people, closing their eyes doesn't feel great. For others, it does. So just notice what feels best to you and to your body. If you choose to have your eyes open, I just invite you to have kind of a soft gaze, just a little bit in front of you and kind of towards the floor. And just to start to begin to notice your breath. Just notice the rhythm as you inhale and exhale. Notice the pace. And as you just notice your breath, just draw your attention to the reality that Jesus is the breath of life. It is His breath that's going in and going out as He sustains you with His breath. And then I invite you to just shift your attention next to your feet on the floor, just firmly grounding your feet into the floor, into the earth. And as you're noticing what this feels like to have your feet just anchored into the floor, into the earth, just draw your awareness that God created the earth. He used the dust of the ground to form man. He uses the earth to sustain us, producing food, shelter for us. Just notice your feet on the ground. And then next, I invite you to just draw your attention to the moisture in your mouth. Just notice. Just notice the moisture. And then draw your attention to the reality that Jesus is the living water. He sustains us with living water, water that we don't have to go back to over and over again. Just notice that feeling in your mouth And then finally, the element of light. I just invite you, in your mind's eye, to just draw your attention to the memory of a day when you were out in the bright sun, feeling the warmth on your face, the brightness of the light, recognizing that Jesus is the light of the world, that his light dispels all darkness, that when we abide in him and he in us, we live in light, and there is no darkness. We are safe. So I invite you now to just again notice your breath. Breathing in and breathing out. And what it feels like to just kind of be connected to your body, to your storytellers, your mind, your heart, your emotions, sensations in your body. And Father God, we just thank you. We thank you that we're fearfully and wonderfully made, that every single moment of our lives was ordained before one began, that you are writing our stories, that you're not surprised by the moments that we blow it, but you just wait, loving us perfectly for us to draw near to you in those moments, God, that rivers of living water can pour forth from us. As you pour into us, we just receive your love and your grace and your mercy, welcoming you to just bring us to these places of healing and awareness, stories that we've maybe not allowed you to show us, be with us, comfort us, soothe us, that then we can be connected to you in a way that rivers of living water pour forth from us to our children, that we can begin to see our children the way you see our children, Lord. Thank you for this rhythm of grace, for this rhythm of knowing you more and more. Now, Father, I just pray that this generation that's being raised in our midst, God, would be just vibrant lights for you as we begin to walk with you in this way. Oh, God, we love you so much. Have your way in us and in our homes. We invite you. We thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.